Hi, and welcome to the 153rd edition of the Keen Minds podcast. We're covering NBC's The Blacklist. Today, we're covering episode 10. Season 10, episode 18, episode 19, and episode 20. I'm Jen, aka Takata Saigo.
And I am Tessa. And we're covering Wormwood, Room 417, and Arthur Hudson, who I hope has a very bloody, painful, messy death.
I have a lot of complaints about a character that I started out fairly fond of. It's been the most uneven writing has been Arthur Hudson.
I think it's been perfectly.
See,
even.
I don't
I've hated it. Seems I.
I know you have. I know you have. But I feel like they painted him in one way, and then he. It just. Let's go ahead. Let's start with Arthur.
He's a zealot.
Well, yes and no. So, like,
he thinks because
he has morals. But it went from
ooh,
like I have.
He has morals. No, he's obsessed.
That's
different.
How it start. Well, that's how it started. As they painted him as someone who was looking for the truth, that had morals, and it wasn't just like, oh, this is an unreliable narrator.
Compassion.
It wasn't like it was an unreliable narrator in which, oh, well, he sees himself this way. Like, you know, no one sees himself as the villain sort of situation. But they painted it in a full picture. Like, this is supposed to be a decent guy. And then progressively, he's just gotten more and more obsessed. And I just never, at least for me, felt that turn. It felt like it was, he's a character that's there strictly to get us from point A to point D. And they sort of skipped over B, and C was a hop and a skip. And so,
well, I beg to disagree there, because one thing that reminded me of Hudson was Wrestler. And they've been described both in the same way, you know.
But we had reasons for Wrestler.
Well, but the point is, When I saw him, it was that exact same reaction, except that, of course, it was like amplified because Wrestler had other things and he was part of the task force. So you kind of got attached to him. Well, for me, Hudson was always like, this guy, he's going to get obsessed like Wrestler got obsessed with Reddington, and his entire life is going to go down the toilet. Just as, you know, Wrestler lost Audrey. By the way, everybody forgot about Audrey. Like, she didn't die in front of you, Wrestler. I think you had two women. So, and by the time you arrived, she was already dead, but never mind that. I guess it's, you know, selective rewriting of scenes, or sounded just more dramatic. But Audrey is forgotten. But anyway, the boy
actually died in his arms.
Exactly. It's that he remind me of Wrestler without any of redeeming qualities of Wrestler. And I have a feeling that, and I knew that he was going to start doing bad things, and he was in a squeaky clean. And sure enough, I mean, using somebody who's an addict and who's telling you very clearly is an addict and I am not comfortable, and manipulating at that, it's, to me, it's morally reprehensible.
Oh, that was
far
terrible.
Far worse than anything that Red has done.
That's what I'm saying, is that it felt like we sort of skipped over, you know, step B and hopped and skipped over C. We went from a guy that was willing, you know, when he put parents away, he was willing to, you know, financially support the daughter as she went through the system. Mm-hmm. He seemed to have a moral framing in his life, and he was seeking out the truth, and then all of a sudden he's turning around, and he's and part of that could be that they just didn't take their time with him because they didn't have the time. They've had a whole lot of filler. They could have had the time if they really needed it, but I felt like it was they had something they wanted to do with him and it wasn't well executed, therefore I don't feel satisfied in the path that he took. Mm. I have no problem with him being that way, but take Gale, for instance.
Yeah.
Gale was a really well done character in which you're like, yes, he's seeking the truth, but he's also very willing to push boundaries to get there. He was willing to do what he thought was necessary to get to the end. The ends justify the means kind of guy. And yeah, he was a well-written character. You and I loved him to death. I feel like Hudson could have been that character and probably should have been a character like that if they wanted to use him in this way. But they just sort of skipped over it. It's like, eh, we're at the end. Yeah. We don't have to worry too much about it. They'll get it. They'll get the idea.
But it didn't bother me. I hear what you're saying, but it didn't bother me. Hudson was has been for me ever since I looked at him. I knew he was going to do bad things, and I'm not even sure that the pursuit of the truth is actually what he's all about. It's more like a zealot, like it's about, you know, he says it's not about the election, but I think it is. I think that just like he do something nice for that woman? Absolutely, he did. And it wasn't his responsibility and et cetera, et cetera. But doing one good act doesn't make you a good person, or Red will be the absolute best person on earth.
I agree with you there. But when you're trying to paint a picture in that limited time, every inch of it matters. And if that didn't matter in the way we were supposed to view Hudson, there's no reason. It was just, in other words, it was just a time fill. I mean, this isn't a character that was...
He started getting information. And by the way, I have a thing about the whole setup of this set of episodes that started with Morgana and went all the way here, in which Red is dismantling his empire. And I found it very good that he gave reasons for this, that he said, this part of my life lasted longer. This chapter lasted longer than it probably should have. And there's endings. Things begin, things end. And I don't want my people to go into other criminal enterprises.
I really liked that. To
just, you know, retire and have a rich, happy retirement. And they can only do that if the FBI if they think the FBI is after them. Which was, to me, was a perfect definition of Red. I mean, he's doing something bad, and he certainly didn't probably push them into doing that. He probably paid them very well and gave them a very lovely retirement. And now he's making sure they don't go forward to become other criminals. Also, they have a lot of information about him that he probably prefers doesn't get dispensed to other criminals.
No enforceable NDAs in the criminal world.
But the one thing that keeps, I can't tell anymore if things are a plot point or they're just plot holes. But
that's part of the problem, yeah.
Ren was bugging the entire Capitol. And Celia makes a point of saying he was bugging every senator and congressperson. If he was bugging everybody, how come he didn't know that what Hudson was up to? He said he was up to in his own office. Unless it was Red who put him up to it and said, you should look into this as a way to get the ball rolling with his ending his empire. And especially if he's planning on faking his own death.
In other words, in case, like if he's using Hudson to do this, like he's been using everything else.
Yep.
Maybe. I could see that. I could definitely see that.
To push the task force away from law enforcement too. Like, you've done it. It's time for you to retire.
While I can see that as a possibility, that's one of those things that I'm sitting there going, that's not your call to make. Like, his own people, okay, you know. But the task force were in the FBI long before Red ever came along. So essentially... But that's very Red. He likes to control absolutely everything.
Well, Cooper was retired and came back because of that.
Cooper,
Wrestler could probably go on for a few years and, you know, could become the next Harold Cooper. Celia is on loan, so she's got nobody in that wake. And Herbie was... That was just he's an expert witness, so forensic specialist. So that was so I'm I mean, it's typical Red. Is it his choice to make? Of course not. This doesn't mean that he won't.
True. It's very true.
So I mean, I these three episodes were competent. Were I mean, I watched them and I didn't feel like, oh my God, I just gotta force myself to watch it. It was okay. It was entertaining. I was actually impressed with the newbie.
Yeah, so let's go through them one by one just to kind of, because I do want to give hat tips to the folks that were involved in it. So episode 18 from season 10 was Wormwood, and it was written by Sam Eisendrath, which is John Eisendrath's son. And big kudos to the director, Diego Klattenhoff. And so well done, Diego.
It was
So
an enjoyable episode. It wasn't, you know, it was like the apothecary with Alistair Pitt, but it was well done. It was enjoyable. I like the characters. I like particularly how it was framed that love can be a great thing and a terrible thing. I love that line.
I really liked it. Yeah, love in the wrong hands or hearts is reckless was the exact quote. It was a fantastic line. I actually have it in my notes. My only complaint that stood out on it was when Red leaves to go to Agnes's recital, there's really no repercussions. It's like other people were opening windows and dropping dead immediately. And Red got poisoned, but there's no repercussion. It's just like, well, he's the hero of the show or the anti-hero of the show, so no repercussions for this dude. And that just seemed like kind of a
Unless he's taking
stretch.
some immune suppressant things, or as you
Well,
said,
that
he didn't
nothing was
care.
said. Nothing. I know he didn't care, but you can't just magically, if you're poisoned, you can't just will yourself to live through it. There has to be some sort of antidote or wait through, when you pass it. And so I just
Or
that.
he didn't come into contact with any allergen or whatever. I mean, I wasn't bothered by that.
I
Deus
was.
ex machina, it's kind of like, it's, hey, you know what? In this season, that's a minor thing. I mean, I've seen episodes this season in which I have to literally force myself to finish watching them.
That's fair.
This was not one of them. I enjoy the characters. I enjoy the woman. I thought the acting was particularly good. So
Yeah.
kudos to Diego for the direction. It was really good. And then we had Agnes dancing ballet, which was,
A
it's
callback,
interesting that it was Swan Lake. Of course, Agnes is older and more experienced in dancing. The other girl was probably 7 years old,
Yeah, she
something
was
like
young. She
that,
was
even
very
much
young.
younger. So it was, and it had a kind of sad quality to it. This one was a nicer, happier, prettier experience to have Red there at the recital, watching her, felt like, where the other one was sad and full of longing, this one was full of life. And I found it interesting that even as we reach in the end, and before it was all about endings, now, and somebody mentioned this in Reddit, so it's not my observation, that Red has been saying a lot of things about spring and renewal and changing skins and shedding and regeneration and new chapters. And I wonder if, we all think that he has to die, but I wonder if he's just going to just become go to something else.
Yeah, very end of did you ever see the show White Collar?
No.
Spoiler alert for anybody, skip ahead a couple minute or a minute or so. At the end of White Collar, which is a show about a con artist who works for the FBI, for the White Collar division. He's a CI for the FBI. When I first started watching The Blacklist, I was like, oh, I'm gonna like this. It's gonna be kind of like White Collar. But anyway, at the end of it, Neil, instead of gaining his freedom and continuing to work for the FBI, he ends up faking his death and going on. I wasn't particularly crazy about the ending, but it is a very reasonable thing, I think, for someone in that arena, you know, for a character in that arena to do. And heaven knows we've had a few fake deaths over the years. Blacklist.
Well, I even know that I have a feeling, let me put it that way, that when the show ends, we're going to think that Red died. And then Agnes is going to get in the mail the beginning of a chess match. Remember how he gave her the chess set and all that? I have a feeling that's how we're going to know that he's not dead.
Yeah. The White Tulip for Fringe. Yeah. All these other shows that have done similar things. It definitely aligns with it.
Mm-hmm.
So anything else for Wormwood? Can't say the name.
No, I really liked also seeing it was absolutely lovely to see Hedy.
Was Hedy in Wormwood?
Doesn't it start in or maybe no, maybe that is room 417?
Hedy was in Arthur Hudson.
Oh, okay. So I got them all mixed up. See, that's happening once you watch all of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a competent episode. It was interesting. It was good that it was ingenious the way they did it on the dishes. I like that. I mean, plot wise,
yeah, that was clever.
That was excellent. That was clever. I like that. And that they took them, it explained why it took them so long to figure it out until the other guy died and then they start putting it together. Where were they? So then I don't have anything else. It was a nice episode.
All right. So moving on to episode 19, it was room 417. So written by James M. Feinberg and directed by Andrew McCarthy.
And this is another newbie. I don't think he has written anything else for the Blacklist.
I don't recognize the name, no.
So, Ben, how did you like that one?
I liked it decently well. And okay. So it was a more interesting episode. And it made, for me, it made the previous episode in which they uncovered... Morgana, it made more sense. Especially, I believe it was this episode where Dembe was talking about that he only, you know, how Red compartmentalized everything, and that's why he didn't know about certain things. And that makes some sense, but also, I have to think back when, at the end of season 8, when Red just disappeared, and Dembe inherited everything. Why wouldn't he have known about all of this? He couldn't keep everything afloat.
I don't think that he inherited any of that in that sense. I think that what he was managing was more the shipping part and the business part, not the intelligence. In fact, we have never seen, I mean, we've seen him with the ships and the ports and all that, but not with the, and knowing the people, not necessarily knowing the structures. I mean, he knew more or less how we work, because we saw that in Bookman Baptiste, that he said, you know, how the shipping went and the route. So he knew some of it, but he obviously didn't know the structure. And I after looking carefully and even going back to look at the line specifically, it doesn't seem to me that was such a hard recon, that Dembe did know something, he didn't know everything.
I have a question for you. Mm-hmm. So the whole story, and I understand, because I'm with you, I think it's absolutely despicable for the character. But Hudson using Pritchard, the way it went about. So supposedly he got an order from a judge that he was allowed to tap Wrestler's phone, but he didn't want to go to the FBI because he was afraid they'd circle the wagon. And so he goes to Pritchard, who is a drug addict that has a connection to Wrestler, and has him use a device to be able to bug Wrestler's FBI issued phone. So I have some hangups about that whole thread. What are your thoughts?
It fitted with my vision of Hudson as somebody who would think that because he had a cause that he considered to be good, and I think that, in fact, John said it, said, I bet you think you're a good guy.
Oh, that was a fantastic line there. It was.
That he would stoop to that level of inhumanity, it was in line with the character that I have seen from the very beginning. I know that you saw him different, but to me, he was just that level of repugnance of people who are supposedly doing the right thing, but something about them just gives you the heebie-jeebies, and you know they're not right.
The very much holier-than-thou sort of mentality on things.
Yeah, and in fact, very much similar to Reddington, except that he's not protecting innocence, because using an addict in that way, it's beyond despicable. I mean, somebody who's finally putting somebody who's a federal agent, who's got addicted probably in the line of duty with the things they have done or getting injured. We don't know how, but if they, in that reunion, there was all people from branches of the government. They all talked at first when they met about how hard it is and the demands and the things they see. And then using that probably was caused by his work to further compromise the one relationship that is holding this man together. It's, you know, it's exactly what should not be done, is a use of the weak by the strong, by somebody who's thinking of himself, they're doing the good thing. They're not, because it doesn't matter how you get there, the way you did it, because it's not that you're doing something and the end just justify the means. You're going at the end thinking of yourself only, not of the end itself, but of yourself and what you think that you have.
And the logic
didn't make any sense either.
I was gonna say that was my hang up, was the logic. But just to comment on what you said about, you know, I think that Hudson thought he was doing the right thing. And we've had plenty of situations in which the ends justify the means. And I think that's what he was doing. Do I agree with that one? No, absolutely not. He took a desperate man and twisted it for his own, you know, his own ends. That's something that even I don't think Red would have done. And Red's done some stuff that I absolutely despise over the years. I don't think even Red would have done that. And so I think there's a definite line there that he crossed with it, that I'm not defending him. I don't like what he turned out to be. But my hang up and really what I was thinking on is the logic of the path they took with him. Like, he brought in a man that my guess is his clearance level is revoked at the moment because he's an active addict. He probably does not have his clearance level currently. Brings him into something in which you have to have one of the highest clearance levels. Even he, as a congressman, was not privy to what was going on. He had to dig into it. And I think it was in Arthur Hudson, in which the AG actually said, you know a whole lot more than you should. And I was like, thank you. Finally, someone calls us out, because he really shouldn't know all of this. He's dug into it in a place where he doesn't necessarily belong. It's not his committee, it's not, you know, he's found this and he pulled a thread and then just went after it where it's really not his place. And a lot of those intelligence committees are compartmentalized like that to keep assets safe. And that's why you can't go doing this.
That's my point, is that let's say that the logical way for him to proceed, if he was really up and up, would be to go to the FBI and ask and say, is this a sanctioned operation?
Yeah.
And then I just want to know if they really have results. And then ask the Attorney General. The Attorney General will tell you, yes, it's a sanctioned operation. We know what they're doing. Shut the fuck up.
Yeah. Exactly. And that's kind of what the AG said. He was like,
yeah. Yeah. Just that going into like, and then immediately assuming that first, that the FBI is so stupid that they don't know what one of their units is doing, that the entire government is so stupid they don't know, instead of saying, you know what, maybe this is enough. And okay, I'll ask the questions, is that a budget well used?
And but maybe then, it's a crime. And when he finds out that it's Raymond Reddington, his immediate go-to was Reddington is using this task force instead of this may be a criminal informant.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not a far leap to go, maybe this is a very high level. This is buried under mountains and mountains of red tape. Maybe this is a high level asset.
Yeah. Instead, he goes into this convoluted way of finding things out that breaks the law, that breaks morality, that, you know, that compromises somebody that ended up dead. And by now you are at a point where you really are no better than Raymond Reddington.
I would argue worse. I mean,
probably worse.
Something coming from me.
Because Reddington usually takes precaution to protect the innocent. This guy used the weaker point he could find, somebody at their lowest level trying to crawl up and put them in there. And that to me is despicable. The strong have an obligation to care for the weak.
The route that he went to, you know, if he actually got a judge's permission to tap the phone, which I'm not sure he would have gotten to begin with. I mean, because you're not really supposed to spy on, it's supposed to be a really high bar to be able to tap someone, a U.S. citizen's phone.
Why would I, if somebody has a classified assignment and a judge can just say, oh, sure, go spy on them.
Exactly. Who has no intel on what's going on.
They had to put it in, they have to go in his phone. So it just seems to me that, it makes me wonder, did Red put him up to it and knowing who he was, or is this guy really, I mean, I just hope he dies a terrible, terrible, bloody and painful death. I have several ambition, but I'm sure that they can come up with something very good. I enjoyed the room 417 enormously. I'm not saying it was a perfect episode, but it was great to see. It reminded me of Drexel when they see all those feeds.
Yeah. No, it was a, I think it was overall a very well, you know, for where we're at, it was a well done episode. It was intriguing. I think it helped other things make sense. I love the actor that played the general there, because he was on a show called Manifest, which was also NBC. Mm-hmm. And played a high-level military personnel. And I'm like, he just has that face. Like, he apparently has a face that says, high-level military. Like,
excuse me, if that is your top military, why on earth are you even concerned with wrestler? What you should be thinking is, if high-level military personnel taking a classified, very highly sensitive home.
I don't think you're allowed to do that. Really? I don't think so.
I mean, that is... And then it started claiming like I have a high level of clearance. It should have been
it doesn't
like,
matter.
Wow, you're gone. You're gone. You took this document home. Your classified thing and your pension are gone. Goodbye.
I love how the person said, you know, what are we supposed to do? Chain him to his desk? No, he's supposed to go into a skiff and review it in the skiff. That's what he's supposed to do.
Yeah.
Like, he's not allowed to take it home.
I don't care. So everybody likes working home. It doesn't mean that you can't, when you're doing classified things that put the nuclear secrets in danger.
I mean, even if you take the ginormous jump that you'd have to get to say, oh, well, his home's basically a fortress. I loved that one.
Yeah, it was a fortress. Yay, but wow.
Was his car on the way there and the McDonald's run he made on the way home? I mean, like, you know, I don't know. I just threw that one in there. But, you know, just all the mini stops he might have made on the way home to do his errands and taking...
You can take that car with a helicopter. You can just come and grab it and transport it. You don't even need to have him stop. It's just, I mean,
my point being, it's so absurd. It was wild. I kind of backed up and went.
And yet, you know, it happens. You know, it happens. You know,
I'm sure it does.
Hey everyone, this is Jen. Just a heads up, Tessa and I had some technical difficulties at the in the middle of our recording, and so you're going to hear a jump from talking about the documents back to Hudson, and that's because it took us a good 20 minutes to resolve the issues, and by the time we got back to it, we had no idea what we were talking about. So apologies for the skip around here, but we're back to the episode.
Well, we were talking about how Hudson has gone the wrong way. Even if he started with a pure purpose, by now he probably has spent a lot of resources in trying to prove something that the Attorney General told them that's just not. He just then made a connection to Room 417, and we were discussing how it's difficult to believe that Red didn't know that what Hudson was doing if he was recording everyone.
Yeah, I think I'm on board with you that it would make sense that Red is aware of Hudson. Yeah. And it would make sense in lines with all the other stuff that he's been doing to send the task force down this path.
I think that we were on that how despicable it is to use this guy who has probably acquired this addiction in the line of duty, and just I see him like a wrestler, like a bad wrestler, you know, like would be the dark wrestler. You know, you look like a dark Boy Scout wrestler. Yeah, like you look like a Boy Scout. But inside of you, you have the same ruthlessness that made Raymond Reddington what it is, but worse, because you destroy the life of an American while claiming that wrestler, telling this guy that wrestler is a threat to national security and put American lives at risk, when he has absolutely no notion of that.
And as far as we can tell, trimming down, he was doing two things that, I mean, well, three things I'd say that really got me. One was how he handled Pritchard. I mean, that's just despicable on many, many levels. The other was bringing in people that had zero clearance for this. He had Pritchard. He had the guy that was doing the audio for him, that was, you know, going through the audio. Multiple people. He
didn't have the clearance to go into classified stuff.
And so, I mean, he was going rogue and bringing a whole bunch of people into it and opening them up. I mean, think about it. If this had gotten out, let's just go down the path of, let's say, instead of going to the AG, it had, you know, the guy that was, or let's just say the drug addict went and had an episode and spilled his guts to some random person on the street. It hit the tabloids, and our enemies and our friends both found out that we'd been spying, you know, that a CI, American CI, was spying on them and potentially giving information back. They would blame the American government. They could turn into war. There are whole masses of implications that could happen there. And this guy is just...
And besides, what about just shutting down the part that corresponds to the Capitol and leaving open the rest of the stuff? Because if you manage to have to reestablish those, now you have a lot of information. Yeah. I mean, it's just like, this is like, it feels like this is like a five-year-old who decided to put on a suit and play grown-up in intelligence.
It's wild.
He needs a spanking of major proportions. One that preferably ends with his guts spilled all over the street.
But I'm trying to remember what my third point was. I had three points that I really disliked. So it was the way he treated Pritchard, the fact that he brought everybody in.
And once he got into the post office, I just wanted to slap him so badly. Well, he was like strutting around, and
he was rewarded for his poor behavior. But I mean, he put everybody at risk, not just this particular task force. Not, I mean, I don't think he cares. I think there are a lot of people probably didn't care if Red was at risk, but he put his entire government at risk with the way he went about it. It could have turned out very, very badly and still could. And just Hudson, I don't like, I felt like the writing was uneven, but if they were looking for, and I do think at the end we're supposed to despise him, and I at least you guys did that correctly.
Yeah.
We do now, all despise him at the end.
What did you think about Cynthia Panabaker's defense of Cooper and the task force? I thought it was outstanding.
Oh yeah, I love Cynthia. I've liked her for a long time. And then
she left that lovely message in Cooper's phone.
That Cooper always made her feel a little safer. I liked that one. And so we've kind of, it's easy to go from episodes 19 to episodes 20 because they sort of correspond together. But just so that we are, since we're going back and forth with them, I do want to call out the folks that were involved in it. Episode 20 was Arthur Hudson by Sean Hennan and directed by Christine Moore. And so I was thrilled to death that someone finally called Hudson on the fact that he was in over his head. He was doing way more than he ever should have. I mean, Red was funny, but the AG saying it was just like, thank you. Someone in the government's finally going, you shouldn't have this information. Like, this is not on your plate. There's a reason that they compartmentalize things in the intelligence business. Everybody can't have everything or else it's going to get leaked. The more people see it, the likelihood that it gets leaked skyrockets.
But I got to say, I loved that speech that Red gave when he basically hacked into the meeting.
Because it was so Red.
It's one of those things that I've always got, and one of the reasons probably why I like all the spy stuff is like people want their intelligence, but you don't want to get your hands dirty, and intelligence is a dirty business. And yet we're all a little safer. And there is every day there is plots being untangled by people who do dirty work. And you're very, and I hate the people that are very happy to like wash your hands and think that they're cleaner than thou.
Well, I liked Cooper's statement. I'm trying to see if I have, I don't think I have the exact quote here.
Like, is Don apologizing for?
Yeah, I was going to say Red's quote, the line that I really, really liked from it was, you made a devil's bargain. Did you really expect me to stop being the devil? Mm-hmm. And that was such a great callback to two different things. You had Sympathy for the Devil, which was in the pilot, ended the pilot.
And then again, at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, I had forgotten about that, but yes. And then also one of the Johns made the comment at one point, said that Red has always been a bad guy. Don't mistake Red for a hero. He's always been a bad guy. And so it really reminded me of that. Real fast, that third point with Hudson that I was trying to remember a second ago, so it was what he did to Pritchard. It was the fact that he opened up the intelligence leak to so many people. And the third was the fact that he went in and clipped Cooper's statement. And so he intentionally clipped it to make it fit his narrative. And so if he was really after the truth, he would have given him the entire recording and said, go at it.
That was when he showed that he was totally insane.
Exactly. It was, he crossed a line with Pritchard and then he crossed another one by clipping comment. But
my feeling with Hudson, and now that you say that, and maybe I can put now better words to it, is even when we saw what he did with Pritchard and the way he was approaching and using him, It made me think of, was that what he did when he convicted the parents of this woman? And was he atoning because he felt bad for the girl being caught up in that? Or was he atoning because deep down he knew that he had done something bad? And I am not sure that he was atoning because he had morals, or he was atoning because he did something that he knew to be morally despicable.
I agree with you on that, just based on what we've seen. But I do think that if that's the case, they could have done a better job showing us that. I think that the way they painted him, it felt, I think this is one of the things I'm kind of hung up on. I feel like the way they presented him to us at the beginning, we kind of had the rug pulled out and he switched without a reason why. And so
it didn't feel that.
To me, that
was, I saw him and I just knew it. Yeah. I just had a feeling about him that, you know, I don't care if you present like that. But the fact that they have been making those things about, you know, a Boy Scout, remind me so much of Wrestler at the beginning. Yeah. And I wonder if at the end it's going to come to Wrestler, to what happened to him, you know, as a recovered Boy Scout, that he had come to understand that the world is not black and white, that, you know, and everybody forgets there was a nuclear weapon. There was people that were unleashing a plague. There were intelligence of the satellites, the codes of the satellites that Red actually acquired for the United States to give them back to them. Sure, a profit, you know, but, you know, it's not, this is capitalism. We like capitalism. So don't stop liking because it's Raymond Reddington.
Hey, you know me, I'm a fan of capitalism.
Yeah, so am I.
So I was going to say, on top of the fantastic speech that Red gave, and James has always got quality speeches, just he's very good at them.
It was there was three great speeches.
I was going to say, I really liked Cooper's.
Cynthia's, Cooper's, and Red were phenomenal.
I loved, and all three have very unique voices for their characters. I mean, everybody does to a degree, but like the three of them are just, they're insanely good actors and just have such a quality of those voices with them. But I loved Cooper's because he's not wrong, that he'd essentially been apologizing since day one. You know, they sanctioned this task force and then turned around at every turn and said, but why should we keep you? But why should we keep you? I don't know, because you put me here, because you told me that this is what we're doing. Mm-hmm. You know, he took his orders like a good soldier, and then they tried to pull the rug out from under him every other episode. And that may be a bit of a stretch, but at least every other season. And I just love that he just slams his badge down. He's like, you know what? I'm done apologizing. You know, you people sanctioned it, but you keep coming after us for it.
Yeah, and then Red said the same thing. Mm-hmm. You like my information, but you just don't want to acknowledge where it comes from.
Well, and they want it, but they don't want the repercussions of it. They don't want to pay the price. They want it for free, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they don't want the. How it comes to them. And, you know, at the end is, you know, you have all these characters that have done the same. And one thing that Raymond Reddington has always been very good at is inducing the Boy Scouts into frenzies. And I have a feeling that this guy is just going to go down a dark path. It's like everybody who gets obsessed with catching him
I think the AG agrees. And that's one reason he's putting Cooper on it. Because, I mean, it can be a dangerous choice to put Cooper and Dembe and Russell. People have worked with him for years and years and years.
And we do not know if the AG, what kind of relationship does he have with Reddington?
No, we have no idea. This is the first time we've seen him. Yeah. And so...
Did you like the scene with the whiskey? Because it was very fun to remember that when we met Connolly, that's also came into play.
It would Panabaker. Yes. Every time Panabaker comes in there, he pulls out the scotch and the two glasses. Yep. He's done it with Wrestler. That is a sign for Cooper. That's a sign of friendship when he pulls out the whiskey and the scotch and the two glasses. Mm-hmm. That is a peace offering.
Previous attorney general, and now they're tasking them with this. And it just seems to me that Red has been planning this, and at the end of this there is a fake death, and because it's been also saying this stage of my life lasted longer than it should have, there's time to make to end this.
So how did you feel about the plane exploding and all of that?
That was just phenomenal. When he said, you know what to do, I had a feeling that's where they were going. So I was like, oh, please, please, please do it. And sure enough. And then I had not known about I had not on purpose I had not read any of the spoilers. So it was great to see Andrew McCarthy in as Edward. It's great that we finally got to put a face to Edward.
So I was excited double time on this because I've always been very fond of Edward because he's one of the few that lasted over Red losing everything. Edward's been there since the beginning, but he's always been faceless. And this is, I felt so shorted as a fan, as a longtime fan this season, that to have that, it was actually an acknowledgement of the fans that have been here forever. The actual fans that are keeping up with it, that care. I mean, the casual fan's gonna go, oh, okay. And they're not gonna have a clue. But, and I didn't realize it was Andrew McCarthy at first because I'm terrible with faces. If I don't see a face and like see it regularly and or have a very specific reason to remember it, like I've probably seen the man in passing on various backs, you know, behind the scenes photos, but I didn't put two and
Movies,
two
an actor.
together. I didn't know he's a director. Is he also an actor?
He's an actor as
Oh, I
well.
didn't know he was. But he's directed multiple. How many do you have your
A bunch.
number
I
there?
don't have a
I was gonna
number,
say
a lot
it's
of
an
them.
absurd number. Like, and so I just thought for a man that's been with the Blacklist, was he there since season one? I think he may have
I
been.
think it may have been, yes.
And so a man that's been there through all 10 seasons that has given us fantastic episodes over the years, to have him as the face of Edward just made my freaking day. I have not been
Did
that
you like
excited.
when they stop and he's in front of the truck with the parachute and the whole thing? It's perfect.
And they made sure, because when Sia made the comment about these are human beings, those are real person flying that plane, I was like, that's such a cheesy pointed comment. But I think the reason they were doing it was to draw attention to Edward, and so and to make sure I think the dialogue was crap, but you know.
I love the comment on of on oh my God, what am I blanking on her name? It's not Mirce, is
Oh, Weecha.
Weecha saying, you mean all this time I've been flying on that plane? It has explosives on it.
It's one of the only times I've liked her, is that
And that
comment.
was Grace on Blaze ex plane.
Yeah. When he got it with
Did you like seeing Glenn's mother too?
yeah. They're trying to bring in folks, you know, and I think that's part of what they're doing with Red, essentially giving away a bunch of things. I loved him buying a bird sanctuary for Hetty. Like, I feel
He
like I
wants to
didn't.
get her out of the crime as well.
Yeah, and get her to something kinder, something that she loves. And I loved that. I didn't expect to be as fond of Hetty over the years as I've become. But she just kind of pops in and out, and she's been there for so long. Hetty's just, I
And we
love the
saw Brimley,
actress.
and we saw
And
Brimley,
yeah, we haven't
and
seen
he
him
says,
in.
I gotta get a new job. How am I gonna do if I don't attach electrode to someone?
I just love that. Where would I've ever gotten the idea that you like animals? It's such
Yeah, I just don't know anything about them.
line. Oh my gosh.
All the animals that start with B. All his
Yeah.
animals' names start with B.
No.
Beatrice, yes.
Oh, their names. Their
Betty,
names.
yeah, their
Yeah.
name, not the animals, the
I
names
thought you
of
were
the
saying the
animals.
animals. I was like, no, he's had an alpaca. I know he has.
Yeah. Berenice.
I never thought about that, but I think you may be right. But it just that was nice, and it's kind of a it's a nice wrap up to be able to see these folks again before the show wraps, because you can't always, you know, see them all in the final episode, obviously, or episodes. And so it's a nice nod to folks that have been with us, some of them since the beginning. I mean, Brimley's been here since early seasons. Maybe one.
Season one, yeah,
Was it?
when
Yeah.
they were trying to find Berlin.
Yeah. And so I love those kind of nods, but by far, Edward has been my favorite. It's
Well,
just.
it's nice to put a to you know after all that I
Yes.
thought it was a little bit like oh, what was the show? the nerdy one, with the guy who was a scientist, and
oh,
then
Big Bang Theory.
Yeah, Big Bang Theory with the woman who we never saw her, but it was always the voice.
Oh, the mom, yeah,
the mom, yeah. It was very funny. So I like that. It's been nice to see them. We saw Manny that has been there too since season one, and it was nice to get Glenn's mother, which kind of brought Glenn back. And
as best as they could, yeah. I will say it was just.
Do you think that Red has the post office bug too? Because when we were watching stuff, we were watching him in cameras, in black and white cameras. And I wonder, does he have the post office bug too?
I'm sure he does. Sense? I mean, why would he not?
Everything we were watching that we're doing, it was in cameras, in black and white cameras. And I'm thinking,
I imagine. I mean, he's had people like Tadashi in there multiple times. So, I mean, like, he's had his ways of doing it. And, I mean, he's had them out and had access to it because he murdered Wu Jing there.
Yep.
So he has the access, and he has the history of doing stuff like that. So I wouldn't be shocked at all.
And, well, now we got confirmation that he voided his immunity agreement. So that was one thing he wanted to do. He wanted to be chased. And without the immunity agreement, they couldn't have done that. So that's what makes me think that he really was the one who tipped Hudson in some way to look for the task force and get that. I don't quite think that he thought what was going to happen or what kind of person Hudson was. But it seems certainly there is things in there.
Yeah. I did have one question. Well, I always have questions, but I understand why he didn't for the story's sake. But when Wrestler left Pritchard there, I mean, and you know, as he was like tucking him into bed rather than taking him to the hospital, not knowing what all he'd taken. I mean, there were medications and alcohol, like he clearly had mixed and probably should have gone to the hospital, and he ended up dying because he OD'd. I'm sitting there going, why? Why would he have not, like,
well, maybe
called an ambulance
or
something?
I'm not an addict, so maybe Wrestler knew that he was okay and all he needed was to sober up. And
I mean, I'm not either, so, but I would think that you, unless you're a doctor, you really can't tell, because if you don't know exactly what all they've taken.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I guess it worked.
It was story-wise.
Yeah. It worked for the, you know, he leave him and the guy's just wrecked by guilt and that's up, you know, backsliding into ODing.
Yeah. And so, and of course we ended the episode with Red sitting in Cooper's kitchen, as he does.
Yeah.
Brad loves to just sit in people's homes. That's his jam.
Yep. I love how he offers Cooper's a drink in his own house.
Yeah.
Mm.
And the line of the catch me if you can, it was it was nice.
Yep. And then there he's gone, and Cooper looks at the gun and says, oh no, I'm not doing that.
Oh, real fast, one thing I did skip over. How did you feel about Red giving Agnes Liz's badge?
I think it was, I liked it, and I liked the fact that he pushed Liz into a career in law enforcement, and it didn't end up well. Agnes has Tom's genes in her. So I'm going to guess that that's going to go even worse. So I think that may have been a very, very good idea. And of course, I mean, Agnes is still one day, Scotty or Howard could come and say, you know, I'm your grandparent, and, you know, she could end up being in that business. But it was kind of sweet. And an acknowledgement that Red made a mistake. And, you know, the story that he gave, sometimes because of what we do, you know, to try to help the situation. And sometimes in spite of trying to help the situation, sometimes things just don't work, or they make whatever we were afraid that was going to happen, happen.
Yeah, I think it was also a nice way to bring Liz into a collection, like we were talking about with Hetty and Teddy and all of them trying to say goodbye, essentially. I think that was, in a way, kind of what that was him saying goodbye to Liz by handing off what he had of hers to her daughter.
And it was interesting, too, how Red, even like the little minute things he had been planning, like he had a custodian for the bathhouse because it was historical. So he gave ownership to a historical society. And it was... It's that kind of little detail that tells you the kind of person Red is. And in general, these episodes have been, you know, it's clear what Red is doing. This part of his life is over and he's ready to start a new chapter. Whether that new chapter is him dead or faking his death or actually dying. But it's generally over. What did you think? Other than that Agnes shouldn't be in law enforcement.
Oh, no, I think she'd be terrible at it. I also have commented that this Agnes that we know now doesn't really feel like the Agnes that would have been Liz and Tom's child either. Like, I feel like she's sort of the placeholder for Agnes. And so it's hard to say for sure because of that. But in general, no, I wouldn't think that Agnes, as the character, you know, should ever go anywhere near law enforcement. Just because I've also thought that Red shouldn't have anything to do with any which direction she goes, because he tried to push Liz and see what happened. I mean, Agnes is going to, like her mother, Agnes is probably going to do what she's going to do.
So. Or not, maybe not. You know, maybe he just takes after, who knows, a great, great grandmother who had nothing to do with nothing. Finally, what do you think is going to happen in the last episode? It seems like it's 10 years that we've been at this, and 10 years is a long time.
It is. It really is. So when we started recording this, I thought, my thought process was, okay, it's going to end by Red dying. You have since shifted me over. I think Red's going to fake his death and we're going to have some sort of, you know, hint that he's still alive, a la white collar ending sort of thing. And so,
why Spain?
I don't know. I do not know about the Spain part. I just, because they can, I don't know.
I mean, of course, choices to actually go somewhere is,
yeah.
Because there is places that probably you can simulate any of them.
Yeah,
it's a bizarre thing to go out.
I mean, there are certain, like, if you were to say, okay, I need to see very specific, you know, things in Paris or London or Rome or anything like that. I'm trying to think of something in Spain that couldn't necessarily, and I'm probably going to get fussed at. I've never been to Spain, so I've never been to any of the big tourist spots. I mean, I know that there's some gorgeous scenery. Ronda, yeah, Spain. If you ever want to see a very beautiful bridge, look at Ronda, Spain.
But why? I mean,
I don't know. I legitimately do not know.
Do you think that the task force will know that he's faked his death or be somewhat complicit in it?
I think Cooper will probably know, because I think he'll need to let Agnes know, maybe. But otherwise, maybe not.
It'd be a very weird situation for him to have to bring Reddington when for Agnes.
I think that if Red was planning to let the task force know, he wouldn't have set, and this is assuming that he set Hudson on this path. If he was going to let the task force know, he wouldn't have set Hudson on this path. Because otherwise, why do that? Why not just fake your death somewhere else? Because Hudson
is a perfect one for making credible.
Maybe. But it seems like a whole lot of work for when you could have done it on an easier path to fake your death and shut everything down. So I don't know.
Well,
that puts a lot fewer people at risk.
Do you have any expectations of big twists or reveals, or that we actually wouldn't even know who Red is?
So I have heard a rumor, I don't know if it's true or not, that they are not going to out and out say. And I think that's one of the most disappointing things I've heard.
That is terrible.
I will be very disappointed. I do plan, if I can get my, because I cut cable years ago, so I've got a pair of rabbit ears to watch things local TV on. I if I can get them to work right, I do plan to watch it live, just for old time's sake. But I'm not necessarily excited for it, just because there have been so many letdowns in the last couple three seasons that I don't want to risk it. And I, like I said, that rumor hanging out, and it could be a fake rumor. Who knows? It could be that they are going to come out and they're going to say, oh, you know, he was her father all along or something. I don't know. Or heaven help us, oh, it's really Katarina, in which I will be screeching from.
Yeah.
Well,
let me tell you what I.
Not in a good way.
Yeah. No, that would not be, the scream will be heard.
It'll be some loud cursing and gnashing of teeth.
I don't have any hope to speak of. Just because in general, everything has been like very over the head, very soap opera-ish, very like
pointed. Surface level. Yeah.
Yeah. Very much so. But I gotta say, I can't help note it. I don't have a hope that it's gonna be great and I'm gonna be, I do not. But one little thing that keeps the interest at not zero, which is the lack of number two. If there is something more bizarre than that, I would love to know what it is. We have had 7 unnumbered episodes in the season. And we have 17 empty numbers. And that's because they started putting some numbers like way past 184, which was, and 182, which was the last episode that we had, which was Natalie Luca. And let me read you the first 10 numbers, just because I know that nobody has them, like, it's not one thing that we have been thinking about. Number 00 supposed to be Raymond Reddington. Number 1, Elizabeth Keene. Number 3, Katerina Rostova, which, if Nakalo stands, is not really, it's just Tatiana Petrova. Mr. Kaplan, Ivan Stepanov, the Osterman Umbrella Company, Tom Keene, Berlin, Robert Vesco, and Dembe Zuma. Can you think of a reason why Arthur Hudson is not number two, or why the hat trick has 3 blacklisters? They could have had numbers. Why, of all the numbers, you're going to leave number two open? Unless you're going to reveal it in an episode.
So I have 2 paths for this. Mm-hmm. Do you want the white pill path or the black pill path?
go for whichever.
The white pill path, we'll start with that, is that they're going to reveal some big twist. Sure. Yeah, it's, you know, it's Red's real name. And that's going to be the... Because if you remember when Liz, when it was... when she was on... No, what was it? I think that they...
She couldn't find his... she was trying to find... She was surprised when she thought wrestler have found her paternal grandfather.
No, that's not at all. Season two, I think, at the end of it, they had a filler. I think they called it Masha Ristova. And then they turned around and changed it to the AG, blanking on his name. But
Tom Connolly.
Yeah, Tom Connolly, thank you. And so like they've done those bait and switches before, and I don't necessarily mean that in a bad way, just like they've switched it around before. So that's my white pill version of it, is that there's a big twist and that they're, you know, whether it's satisfying or not, they've got a big twist coming. The black pill version of it is John Bokenkamp is gone. He's the only one that really knew what the numbers meant, and they don't care anymore.
But why not put number two to anybody?
Because they don't care.
The Night Owl, the Dockery Affair, the Man in the Hat, the Sicilian Owl.
When I say they don't care, the assumption is they literally are not thinking about it anymore. So yeah. I don't know. I hope that's not the case. I hope the first one is, you know, I'd much rather be white-pilled on something than black-pilled. But, you know, who knows?
Yeah.
They've destroyed lot of hope over the years.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't even get 2.5% of hope. But I cannot fail to appreciate that is a nod thing. Especially when they have gone out of the way to put, you know, number 182 and number 195. It's like, why would you do that and not fill number two? It doesn't even have to be consistent, because the Osterman Umbrella Company wasn't really that big a deal. So why is that even there in the top 10?
Yeah.
Why is Ivan Stepanov on the top 10? Or, you know, Robert Vesco, for that matter. All he wanted was to go steal some treasure with Vesco. So it's curious. I think it should be noted. I don't know what it means. I guess we will see. Yep. And I can't believe that this is the next to last time that we are going to be speaking to our audience.
I know. That's really depressing to think about.
it's been a wild ride. We started this, you know, a long time ago, and we had never done it, and we just started because we liked the Keens and nobody else did.
Okay, and nobody that was on the air seemed to like them.
So. And here we are. No Keens left except for Agnes.
And I'm not even sure she's really I think she's a filler. I'm telling you, my thought is
maybe they changed it.
That is not the real Agnes Keen. The real Agnes Keen is off with her parents on a freaking beach somewhere. Telling you.
I like that idea.
I do too. It gets me through it.
So I guess that will be it until the finale, when we will see you afterwards.
All right. I guess until the last time.
Yep. As Fred says, things have to end so that other things can begin.
There you go. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.